WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
And welcome to the program. Tyler Frio, Kayla Moles, and in for Dave Malarkey on this Monday, December 18th. It is great to have you aboard on what is just a kind of dreary day, an interesting day if you are a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, because that's where we're going to start our open talk portion. Yeah, we are going to start in open talk. 724-283-2525 is our phone number. Of course, we are the home of the Pittsburgh Steelers in Butler County, WISR 680 AM. We had the game. Kayla, you are on the scene as a fan yesterday. You have somehow braved it here today to work up until the show. And, well, first of all, let's talk atmosphere. I believe it was a record-breaking crowd at Heinz Field. Pretty crazy?
Yeah, it was. And just even, I mean, we got there a couple hours early and did the whole tailgating thing. Just there was so much electricity. It was crazy. And then we got in and, you know, finding our seats. And there's a couple guys beside us and... You know, they weren't doing anything wrong, but they even apologized. They're like, I literally cannot sit down. He's like, I'm so jacked up on this game right now. I'm so excited. And that's just how everybody was feeling. It was a fun game. I mean, even going into halftime, you know, Steelers were dominating. It was a fun atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, it was billed as the game of the year, regular season game of the year for the NFL. It lived up to all the hype, including the final possession for the Steelers. I guess you could even say final possession for the New England Patriots. And if you have some thoughts on the catch, not a catch, we'd love to hear from you. 724-283-2525. We're hoping to stir up the phone lines today in regards to this. And I think this is, I mean... just listening to even some national programs today, because I'm always interested to see what the perspective is from outside of Western Pennsylvania. Because obviously we are all, or I shouldn't say all, I'm not going to paint everybody with a broad brush here, but there's a lot of Steeler fans
most
that live in this area.
Most of us are.
It wouldn't be crazy to say that most people that live in this area are Pittsburgh Steeler fans. And so you think, you know, maybe if we're surrounding ourselves in a bubble and we think it's a catch or it's not a catch or whatever it may be. Listening to national shows, we almost got to a conclusion, I would say, as a country. This is like one thing that we can't agree on, is that no one knows what a catch is.
Right.
You look at, you know, the whole process of it, you know, the fact that you would think that ball was over the goal line. There's just so many intricacies to the rule. I mean, this is the paragraph is like three the rule is like three paragraphs long, using terminology like survive the ground, which when the referee came on and said that, there's no average football fan or even a high intellect football fan that knows what survive the ground means.
Right. Well, I know that I almost didn't survive the night because I was so mad, and I almost didn't survive the morning. But yeah, I agree with you. It's like tax code. It's like you know what I mean? It's like a dictionary, and people don't, there's just so many rules, and it just, I mean, obviously we're upset about it. I was talking to one of our bosses this morning, and he did make a good point. He was like, you know, he thought it was a catch, and it, you know, should have been a catch. But the Steelers as an organization has probably benefited from this, a similar call before. You know what I mean? There's just too much gray area. You just don't know.
Yeah. I mean, there are a number of franchises that have been affected by this. And then you see a play from weeks before where it happened to New England and they ruled it a touchdown. There's just no consistency with that. And I think that's one thing when we talk about rules and we talk about order in sports and really anything, you want consistency. You want a consistent approach to how this is enforced. That way people know what to do moving forward.
Right.
And again, I think that goes for anything.
Right.
Especially when it comes to what is a catch, what is not a catch in the NFL, because no one knows exactly what it is. I mean, here, someone like me, I've been watching football ever since I've been young, and I was surrounded watching the game by people who've been watching it for 50 years and split 50-50 on that play. Was it a catch? Was it not a catch? I mean, no one knows. I mean, here are people who have watched football for a very long time and they have no idea what it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's just too subjective. And I mean, I would argue that the whole sport could be subjective because you just don't know who the officials are going to be and what they see. let's talk about how that whole thing, how it went down from the perspective of a fan. It was insane because, I mean, even that Juju...
Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, his pass. I mean, it was amazing, and you're like, okay, this is it, and then we get the touchdown, and people just went nuts. I mean, people just went crazy. And then when they overturned it, it was like somebody just let the air out of a balloon. Yeah. And then everybody just turned around and left, and you could hear a pin drop walking out.
Yeah, and then obviously you can question the decision on whether or not the fake spike should have been called, whether or not Ben should have thrown it. You know, my feeling on that was I don't mind the fake spike call, but there are two things that they should have done. You don't go across the middle. It's a fade pass to the corner, and then you could just throw it away and play for the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
So
right, and tie it up and then still keep playing.
Exactly. You have a chance to go to overtime, and there was some miscommunication. You know, Ben said, I had this call from the sideline, and he said. Mm-hmm. And so everyone's kind of directing the blame.
Mm-hmm.
Tomlin said he was going for the win. I like that mentality. They're the New England Patriots. Tom Brady gets the ball. There's a very good chance you lose that game.
Right.
But even that part has just been left out of the conversation. It's become a minor part of the entire, really what I would say, what is dominating sports talk so far today is we don't know what a catch is. And then that has major implications on the rest of the season for the Steelers.
Well, yeah, it does. I mean, that it could have, I mean, it just, the whole picture is different now.
It really
is. We still have two games left. And
yeah, there's still a lot of football left.
Yeah, but it would have been nice to get the win yesterday. And
no
it's
question.
Like, how many different ways can we find to lose to the New England Patriots?
That's exactly
it. We found a lot of them.
If you have any comments on it, we can hear from you. If you need to get something off your chest, we can take care of you. 724-283-2525 is the number. What time did you get down there yesterday? Were you there early?
Yeah, we did get there. It was the only game I went to this season.
Okay.
So, yeah, we did. We did the tailgating thing. Got there about 1:30. It wasn't that cold. It was nice.
No, yeah.
I did get wet. It was soaked. I mean,
it seemed like it was not raining that much up here, if at all.
As soon as luckily tailgating was fine, but as soon as we sat down, it started raining. It was coming down pretty, pretty good. And where our seats were, 10 feet to my right, I would have been under
the awning.
But I wasn't. And I think it even made it worse because I was getting the rain. And then, since I was right off the corner, it was, splashing off the corner. So I'm getting the regular rain plus the splash off the corner. It was wet. But it was a fun game to watch. I wouldn't have changed it.
Well, we're heading out to the phone line. Zen, 724-283-2525 is the number. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Hey, watching that game yesterday, I had no question that was a touchdown when I was watching it. When they came back and said they went to New York and New York said it wasn't, I was just like, I can't believe this.
Right, and I didn't like that they had to overturn what was called on the field. You know, I mean, the refs there called it a touchdown. So for them to overturn that, I didn't think they had enough evidence to overturn it.
And apparently New York looks at every touchdown, apparently, I guess, right?
Yeah.
And it wasn't challenged by the Patriots.
Correct.
Right.
But they couldn't challenge it. I don't believe you can challenge a touchdown on the field, right?
Mm-hmm. Inside the two-minute mark, yeah.
Okay. So I just kind of heartbroken by it, and too bad we couldn't come back and win it. But I blame it on Rob Kraft's Trump friendship with Trump. Hey, good talk to you guys.
You too. Bye bye. That's the quote of the day, right? Yeah. Well, Bob made a good point too. Our sports director here this morning. He said it makes it hard as a fan to watch when there is so many questions. You know what I mean?
Well, that's exactly it. And my whole argument with the NFL, and he mentions people in New York making these decisions. These people who sit as their full-time job to continue to come up with rules, to continue to come up with different ideas, they overthink the entire thing. I think a great rule of thumb for any type of sport would be if 50 guys in a bar think it's a catch, then it's a catch. If everybody at home thinks it's a catch, it's a catch. There just wasn't enough for me for them to spend 2, 3, 4 minutes, however long they took to review that play, and then for them to come out in Heinz Field to make that ruling. You make that ruling a touchdown, say the play stands, which is when they don't really have concise evidence either way.
Right.
Then it's gone. It's these pretentious executives that their primary job is to come up with different rules and to make the rules harder to interpret that we lead to this mass chaos of not knowing what a catch is. If you're playing midget football, if you have a son or daughter playing midget football, high school football, college football, in all three of those leagues, I would be willing to bet my next week's paycheck that that is a touchdown.
I'll bet my next
2 weeks. In the NFL, I wouldn't bet a single dime on what is a catch and what is not a catch, because I have no idea.
And, like, what kind of world is it now? And I'm not – obviously, we need replays, obviously. But it's just – we're living in this, like – frame by frame by frame, they can slow this down. You know, it takes them 4 minutes to figure it out. It just, I don't know.
Well, even, you know, if you're a listener out there, especially longtime baseball fans, I know we have a lot of longtime baseball fans. We've been covering Pirates baseball for quite some time here on WISR since they've moved replay into baseball. Do you feel like it's slowing down the sport? Do you think they'll ever go to balls and strikes where a robot will call them? Do you like the human error element? There, I mean, there's a lot that goes into replay. Like you said, it's a good idea, but at times you're like, boy, this is really frustrating. Well, back out to the phone lines we go. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead.
Hello. I enjoy listening to you folks. I'll just throw this out, and I don't know if Mike Tomlin could have challenged that. I'll listen to your guys' reply on that one. I definitely thought it was a catch, though. Hey, thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Tomlin can't challenge. It goes the same way. Once that challenge comes from the NFL or the officiating crew, inside the two-minute mark, he can't challenge back. I think most people's consensus, again, and we live in Western PA, most of us are Steeler fans, is that it's a touchdown. But that's why I wanted to listen to what some of the national folks were saying. I want to hear what is going on outside of Pittsburgh, and a lot of people are saying they don't understand why that call was changed. Hello, caller. Welcome to It's Your Turn. Go right ahead. Hello, caller?
Hello?
Yes, yes. You're on the air.
Okay. Hey. You know, I'm more upset that 4th and 1 on the 28th, and Tomlin decided to put the whole game in the hands of the defense, who has been doing nothing all day long, really. Why didn't he trust his offense?
Completely agree with you. I was watching the game, and you know, if you give the ball back to Tom Brady, he's going to score. That's just the way he operates. You need 1 yard, and you could have cemented the game. I agree with you. I think they should have went for it.
All this high-power offense, and he turns the ball over, thinking his defense is going to do something. I think that's stupid. That's the wrong call.
I agree with you, and I don't think that was also a conversation that I don't think was being talked about. When Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski are on the other end, I'm with you. And if you turn it over, well, guess what? There's going to be more time on the clock for you to go down on the other end and score, even though that didn't, you know, turn out to be a factor. It was something that in the back of my mind, I'm thinking they're going to score anyways. Might as well let them score early.
And besides, you know, the Steelers are playing a zone defense. You know Brady and Gronkowski are going to pick that apart.
I completely agree.
I think that the calling on the sideline was the wrong call. That's all I got to say about it.
I would agree, and I think that is – thanks for the call, by the way.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I agree with him. Can we talk about Gronk for a second? The guy is – I heard an analyst say this morning, that he was like, he could be in double coverage and he's still open. He's just huge. He's just such a powerful guy.
And that's what – there's this storyline and whatever. I mean, I know they've been to so many Super Bowls and they've won so many things that Belichick is this genius. You know, his teams operate differently than everybody else. If I'm a coach of the New England Patriots and I have this ginormous tight end who is a freak athlete and the best quarterback in the world, guess what my play would be? Hey, Brady, throw it to the big guy. He's going to be open even when he's covered, and we're going to go march down the field and score.
Right.
And they didn't do it all day until the very end. Mm-hmm. And when it was necessary, did they go to Gronkowski? And so, Belichick, he just does it differently than the rest of us. He's just got two really good players.
Right, right. And, I mean, we got to talk about A.B., too. I mean, that changed. Who knows how that would have ended up, you know? That was in the end zone that we were sitting in, and it looked like an ankle when it first happened.
Yeah, we even speculated maybe it was a broken leg. And I just still don't think we've gotten word on any severity. I haven't seen anything. I've heard reports of a partial torn calf, which could knock him out for the rest of the regular season, but potentially bring him back for the postseason. So I agree with you on that one. If you put A.B., Antonio Brown, out on the field, he's a game changer.
Yeah, he is. So who knows what would have happened. It was even extra sad, too, because I don't know if they show this on TV, but right, he went down right after they had just come out and announced, and I don't, you have to help me with the stats. He's the first.
First wide receiver to record five consecutive seasons of 100
yes,
receptions.
That's it. And he obviously got a huge ovation. And that's, I mean, that's a big stat.
Yeah.
That's insane. I mean, I sat there for a second. I listened to it, and I was like, wow.
His endurance, his, for as much of a diva that he is, and he is one. I mean, I was watching. He's literally the spokesman for any advertiser that comes up in front of him and waves money. But for how hard he works on a daily basis, how, you know, and everybody says that. He's yeah. one of the hardest working guys mm-hmm. in the room. He is just such a tremendous talent. For mm-hmm. him to leave when he did, it really hurt the Steelers. Mm-hmm. Now, I will give credit to Martavis Bryant, who showed yes. up and he made some big-time plays
yeah,
when they needed him. A guy that's been very disappointing right. all season. He showed up.
I'm laughing because I had my husband was like, I'll never say anything bad about him again. And we've been
it's
ripping on
takes.
Him all season. You know,
it's all
like,
it takes.
I'll never say anything bad about him again.
Come back next week and he makes a bad play, everybody will turn on him
right.
again.
Right, exactly.
But I just, and I was talking with Kate about this on Coffee with Kate earlier today. It's amazing, and I know not everybody's this way. I know there are Steeler losses that many of our listeners probably just are like, I don't understand what the big deal is. Mm-hmm. Maybe not many, but there are some
yeah.
out there. Just how it affects the workplace dynamic when you get in here the next day. I mean, I walked in early in the morning. I think I said something to you right off the bat. And then Bob Kupp, our sports director, comes in. He's all guns a-blazing.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Klein, again, another one of our early morning colleagues, he mm-hmm. comes in all upset.
Mm-hmm.
And I even think Pat, whenever the first time I saw him today, he came in, that's it, I'm out. It's just funny how the dynamic is. Everybody is so invested.
Yeah, and I don't think that happens everywhere.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, we're so intertwined, you know. And I'm sure you've all seen some of the videos coming out today that are just incredible. I mean, people just
yes.
– there had to have been a couple TVs broken yesterday.
Oh, absolutely.
There had to have been. I hope nobody had a heart attack because you know that happens too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just something different around here.
Well, ESPN, their pregame show was actually outside the Bettis Grill on the North Shore. It was the first time – in the show's history, and they've been doing this, I think, for close to 30 years, at least 20 years, that they took the show on the road. They had been inside a studio all the time. This was the first time they had taken it on the road. And I think they knew when they came to Pittsburgh, there will be some crazy people down there
mm-hmm.
that are going to be willing to stand out in front of our set at 10 o'clock in the morning, waving terrible towels
right.
and just being crazy fans.
Right, right.
And that's exactly what they were. And people know it's different here. You hear it from athletes, and I don't think they're pandering to crowds. You see it with some athletes, too, that go away
mm-hmm.
and return here. There's just a culture of sports in this area that
mm-hmm.
I'm sure there are other places like it, but it's very rare.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, look how much we beat up on the Pirates. The Penguins have won 2 Stanley Cups in a row. They're like, you know, 8th place right now in the Eastern Division. And everybody's like, you got to fire Rutherford. Get rid of Sullivan. We got to really change the whole thing. It's like, hold on, guys. Let's take a break. I mean, this town has wanted to fire Tomlin, I think. I don't know. What's this 11th year? I think 11 times, at least once a year. I was putting them on the hot seat earlier this year when they were 2-2. And there are questionable calls. There are always questionable calls.
Right.
As a guy, you know, myself, that I coach different sports,
mm-hmm.
and I'll sit back after a game and go, I should have done that, I should have done that. Everybody loves the second-guessing nature of sports.
Right, right.
And I think it is, people use the line, it's the ultimate reality show. This stuff isn't scripted. This stuff happens in real time,
mm-hmm.
and you have no idea what the outcome's going to be. And these guys that have to make the decisions are the ones that face the scrutiny. Now, granted, they're very well paid.
Right,
you know,
right.
We're not going to say they're not. But I think that's what makes our industry. I mean, this is the first time I've done a half hour of open talk all specifically related to one game, and we've gotten some calls off of it. There's just a reaction. People love to second guess. People love to – that's my favorite part about
mm-hmm.
sports, is that I could sit down with my dad, my brother, my mom, and for 2 hours after the game, which is what it was,
mm-hmm.
just go on a rant about
mm-hmm.
you know what the NFL does wrong, what the Steelers did wrong, what they should have done here, 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 and here. That's why I love it.
Right. I was calling my dad, but we didn't even get out of the stadium yet. I had him on the phone. And
yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I will say from my perspective, I'm sure there were some incidents, but I was really pleased. Everybody around me was really respectful. Like, everybody was having a good time, and there were a lot of Patriots fans there. I mean, a lot.
And I think part of that reason why, it was such a great game. Like, yes. it wasn't leaning one way or the other. And that's why it kind of stinks it had to end the way it did, because you had two teams, like I said, probably easily the best in the AFC. I'm pretty certain of that. And then maybe the NFL. These are top two legacy franchises mm-hmm. that have been good for 15 years consecutively, going after each other in a game that was just so much fun, mm-hmm. such a great game. And then to have it end by a replay
right.
from a guy in a suit in New York
sucks.
Is like, frustrating.
Even if we did lose, but just lost in another way,
exactly.
you know what I mean? Where it was pretty like black and white, like, yeah, you dropped mm-hmm. the ball. We all see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then it just, that's what I was struggling with this morning. It was hard to get out of bed because you were just watching all these replays and everybody's tweeting about it. And it's like, oh.
I couldn't go to sleep. I couldn't turn off that adrenaline, that the idea that they had it and then they lost it, the roller coaster of emotions you go through, and like, I should not be that much invested no. into a team that is 11-2, has secured a division title, is going to the playoffs, and lost to maybe the best team in the AFC.
Right.
Why
it's
am
not
I
the
that
Super Bowl.
It's not the Super Bowl. There are two more games left, but it was just such an emotionally draining for all 60 minutes, you didn't want to take your head off the
yeah.
screen because you
yep.
didn't know what was going to happen. Mm-hmm. It was just that good of a game.
It was fun. I'm really grateful that I was there, and hopefully when we meet him in the playoffs, we will get the win that time.
All right. Deep breath.
Can we move on now, maybe, for a second or two?
I needed like 20 minutes of therapy. That's why I was very excited that we were doing open
yeah.
talk today.
Do you feel better now?
Yeah, sometimes, you know, when you have the chance to talk to a radio audience, I don't know if anybody even enjoyed this, but
Tyler did.
This was a selfish 20 minutes that I needed to really get a few thoughts out. That the NFL needs to work on things. The Patriots, I do not like them. I don't like Belichick. I don't like Brady. And I thought maybe it was an unfair ending.
I would agree.
Go ahead.
With you
pick another topic.
I would agree with you. Oh, where do we even go from here?
I don't
have like
know.
5 minutes left. Let's.
You want to talk about the touchback rule in the Oakland Raiders New England Oakland Raiders Cowboys game? And we can start on that.
Or we can start on how Bob does not like that the NFL has games on Christmas. He has made that very clear.
I would agree with that.
I do too, even though...
As a consumer, I like it.
I was going to say, I do like eating my Christmas dinner and then sitting, you know, it's
what?
Fun.
It's been 2 years, well, Christmas Eve last year and then, or was it
no,
Christmas
it was,
Day last year? I can't remember.
I think it was.
It was either Christmas
last year
Eve
that
or Christmas
they played
Day.
Thanksgiving Day, Christmas Day, and yeah. New Year's Day. But yeah, but he doesn't like it. Especially in this scenario, they could play Saturday, Sunday. You know what I mean? They don't have to play.
They don't have to play on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
Especially on the road. That would be awful.
Yeah, that would.
What do you
else?
Want to talk
oh,
about
Oh, I
want here?
To talk about the this Amtrak derailment.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know
yeah,
if
yeah.
people have seen this. This is just breaking news just within the last hour or so. An awful Amtrak derailment. This is in the state of Washington near Seattle. They're calling it a mass casualty event, so I'm sure, you know, we'll be talking about it in the days to come. But not only, you know, all Amtrak derailments are bad, this one was over a freeway. And it was like the Amtrak car was like dangling over the freeway, and it looked like that it had actually hit into some cars that were traveling on the freeway. And it was rush hour over there on the West Coast. So
the latest update on it, and this was not the fatality count, but just the passenger count, 78 passengers. There were 5 crew members on board when it derailed.
I did hear that was, they were at the beginning of this route, so it could have been, you know, if you're looking for a silver lining, it could have been a lot worse where hundreds were packed in. But yeah, we still have no word on any.
No fatalities to the people in the vehicles underneath the Amtrak at latest report. There isn't a number. They are saying, this is according to CNN, that there were several people on the train that did die. There's no official number on that.
We'll keep them in our prayers. I mean, could you imagine even driving on that highway
and seeing
this? I mean, the pictures, if you haven't seen
the pictures
yet,
are stunning.
They are. I mean, it looks like something out of a movie.
Yeah.
You know, it does not look like real life. And just a few days before Christmas, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, Really no words for that one.
No, and no. Just... I wanted to mention that. Also, real quick, Star Wars.
Yes.
Star Wars. I saw it on Friday.
It's a big jump.
It was a busy weekend.
It really was. Star Wars, I was invited to go on Thursday night. Well, let me ask you this. Do you mind going to the movies by yourself?
I don't think I've ever done it.
I've never done it either. I'm not a big
would
movie
I do
person.
It? I'm not a big movie person either.
Movie
if I really
theater
wanted to
person.
See something, I would... If I really wanted to see something, I would go.
And I think the reason why Star Wars does well in the box office, $220 million, by the way, is what they pulled in.
Wow.
The second highest, just behind Star Wars, the last one that came out with $248 million. I think in the theater, why a lot of people go see Star Wars is because of the visuals and the sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
That's a movie that it feels most suited and best suited to be seen in a movie theater.
Agreed.
And now I understand there are a lot of, you know, people's technology is increasing in their home, which has really hurt the movie industry, or at least the theater industry, from what they tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know. With the surround sound. But for some reason, Star Wars just has that, let's go to the theater.
Yeah.
Let's see it.
I agree.
And I understand it. I mean, this is what the, not counting the like special edition ones, but like out of the actual series, this was the eighth one?
I believe so.
Okay. So, I mean, obviously, it's got, you know, a little precedent behind it. It's a very popular movie franchise, but I think the idea of going to see Star Wars in the theater is why it does so well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
definitely.
The actual plot lines and the dialogue, you're like, this isn't anything great.
Right.
But everything behind it, I think, makes it well worth
seeing.
Yeah,
and it's the nostalgia for a lot of people. You know, a lot of people grew up watching it and, you know, they did leave a cliffhanger at the end, as you would expect.
Shocker.
They can come make a couple more million
did you go
next
see it?
Year. I did. I saw it Friday.
Oh, okay.
I saw it Friday. I'm not a huge... I mean, I'll come out and say I'm not a huge Star Wars fan.
Neither am I.
My husband is. He's really into it, and he liked it. I liked it, too. I was disappointed. I didn't see that many people in costumes, and I love going to see grown men with, like, lightsabers... And it's just, it kills me. It really does. I love it.
To each their own.
I know, to each their own. And I'm not even making fun. Like, I just think it's so, I like when people get so into stuff. But
such
no
as,
one really brought out the costume.
Such as an eccentric radio host going on a public affairs show for 20 minutes on a rant about what the Steelers did against the New England Patriots.
Exactly.
Yeah, some people just have these weird, intricate, eccentric. Yeah. No,
right.
I went to go see, like, well, this was the dilemma I was in. Let me just ask you a pure social question.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really more of a sleep question. The show was going to start at 10:15.
Oh.
I was filling in for Dave on Friday morning. Well, how long is the runtime of Star Wars?
It was over 2 hours.
Over 2 hours?
Yeah.
Well, that was the conundrum I was in. I'm like, I mean, there are a lot
never
of...
never made it. Never. I barely made it. We went at 7:30. I was still in there. But, you know, they play so much previews.
Well, that was,
we didn't
I was,
get out of there till 10.
I was at an event until, like, 10. I thought maybe I could go down to this particular cinema.
Mm-hmm.
The show started at, like, 10:10. I'm like, actually, by the time I get there, you know, but then again, in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, I'll get there in time. But that means it's not starting until 10:30.
Right.
And I'm just going to be stuck there till...
So close to 1.
Yeah. And trying to get up at 4:15 in the morning is...
It's tough.
It's not pleasant. We'll leave it there.
Oh, Tyler.
Well, we do have a book talk coming up.
Yeah, we do.
And we'll get to that in just a few more minutes. Dave actually had a chance, much thanks to Dave Malarkey for making the time and the folks from the library and the Book Talk Club to get in here and have a discussion about it. So you will hear Dave's voice here. He's not actually here.
Don't
this
be
is
alarmed.
A pre-recorded. Yeah, don't be alarmed. He didn't pop up just for book talk. This was a pre-recorded segment. So that's coming up as well on tomorrow's edition of It's Your Turn. You're talking travel.
Yes, and I am excited to talk to this person. She's from AAA, and we're going to talk last minute holiday travel because it's really dreary today, and people just might be like, you know, I want to get out. I want to do something. So she has suggestions on if you want something last minute, where to go, best way to go about it. And then she also said we could talk top destinations for 2018, specifically
Ooh.
Winter. So like January, February, March, where should we be going?
Top destinations.
Where should we be going?
Hmm. I don't think I have a planned vacation until the summer. I'm just a beach guy.
So you like
maybe
going to the
long
same,
weekend.
That should be a topic for us maybe tomorrow. I like to go different places, but I also respect a person that goes to the same. Cause I do like a beach. And
so
I like my traditions. Like, I like the Outer Banks. I do like that. But I also like seeing new places, too. So it's kind of a,
Well, there's only so many days, obviously, we can take off during
that's
the year.
That's the hard part.
And it is. But I like – the winter's tough for me to even fathom traveling. I know a ton of people like to do it then just to get away from it all.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I could deal with the – not depression, but the weather coming back into it.
It's
that
tough.
Would be the tough – and I understand now why folks who have the ability to retire and then go down to Florida for a few months and come back whenever it's, like, not too bad. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. that's a great
yeah,
idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I will say, I went to Disney Orlando last January, and even – it was just a weekend. And it kind of does – it helps you get through it. It does. Just being down there in the sun for a couple days. It sucked coming back, but it wasn't horrible. Like, it was worth mm-hmm. it to be down there for – 3 days.
Did you like Disney? I've never done Disney.
Never done Disney. Yeah. Well, that's a conversation for another day, but yeah, I do like it.
Well, we do have like 2 more minutes.
Oh,
so.
We still do?
Yeah.
Okay.
that's why I asked you the question.
I thought you were just, you've just been talking a lot today.
Well, I'm all fired up. This Steelers stuff just gets me all wound up.
I know. So when do they play?
They play Monday against Houston at 4:30.
They do play on Christmas Day.
Yeah, he wasn't lying.
I
knew, he being Bob Cupp.
Yeah, that's right. Never mind. Okay.
So you all right with that?
Yeah. I don't think I have a choice, do I?
No, not really. Now, do you have a family gather? Or no, you're going to be...
I'm going out of town this year.
Yeah, you're going out of town.
Christmas. So
first time?
It'll be different. Yeah, I've never been out of town.
We've never done
holidays.
It either. Well, as I said, we don't really do the out of town thing over the winter.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just end it there. Thanks for the callers. Thanks for humoring me while I got some Steelers thoughts off my chest. So hopefully it was therapeutic for all of us. And we've got a book talk coming up. That's on the other side. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. Well, the holidays are coming, and that means your office will start receiving tasteless tins of popcorn, boring baskets of fruit and nuts, and a plethora of 2018 calendars. Ugh. Give your clients something better, something memorable, and something that says Butler. Like a custom gift box from Cummings Candy and Coffee, you can choose from an assortment of chocolate-covered chips, pretzels, graham crackers, and cherry cordials. Add in a half-pound bag of Butler's own proprietary blend of coffee, the Main Street Roast. Call Barry for your corporate order. Cummings Candy and Coffee, serving the Butler community since 1905 and now in 3 locations.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome, listeners. It is a book talk day on the It's Your Turn program. And we're actually pre-recording our interview earlier. This is one of those months that only happens, it's usually a couple of times a year, when we have to make some special arrangements for book talk, because it is the fourth Monday, ordinarily, of the year, but we usually run into trouble with Memorial Day, always on a Monday, and this year it just so happens that Christmas is on a Monday, and so we're all music 24 hours on Christmas here on WISR, so we're presenting book talk a week early. We're pleased to have Kathy Klein with us here from North Trails Library to talk about a book that's very appropriate for the season. First of all, Kathy Klein, good to have you with us again.
Always a pleasure to be here, David.
The book that we're discussing today is Finding Noel by Richard Paul Evans, whom I understand is an extremely popular author. I had not read any of his stuff prior to this book, but you told me before we went on the air that he's extremely popular.
He is, and not just at North Trails, but I think countywide and I think probably nationwide. Mm-hmm. They've had some of his previous books they have made into movies. The most popular one that I believe is The Christmas Box. So folks may remember whether they read it or whether they saw it. I believe it was a Hallmark on The Christmas Box. Mm-hmm. He writes a very heartwarming story for the most part. A lot of them are very true to life. He doesn't do a lot of flourishing and exaggeration, a lot of just things that some folks, a lot of us can maybe relate to, and he just is very popular.
By the way, this is not a brand new book.
I think the copy I have is a copyright of about 10 years ago.
2006, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the Christmas box is even earlier.
Yes.
But it remains popular because on the cover of my copy of Finding Noel, it starts out by the author of the Christmas box.
Exactly.
So obviously they want to piggyback on the popularity of that, which was several years previously.
Yeah.
I looked that up, but I didn't take a note on it. I want to say 1999. I'm not sure.
That sounds about right. Yeah. And he had another very popular series here. I think he just finished up with it either earlier this year or last year, maybe. I think it was referred to as the Walking series. It is a 5-book series.
Oh.
So it was very popular, too. And another reason that I think is because he writes so well, and the books are generally not that large. It's usually somewhere around 300 pages.
It's a fairly quick read. This one is a fairly quick read.
Yes, yes.
Not all that complicated.
No.
It's a heartwarming story. I mean,
it is.
I don't know whether all of his books have been about Christmas, but obviously his two most famous ones have been.
Yeah. No, not all of them are about Christmas, but I do believe that all of them are about are heartwarming. And most of them, the ones that I have read, I have not read all of his, but I've read a good many of them, are about faith and love. And whether it be between a man and a woman, or a son and his father, it's about relationships. And they vary depending on the story. Now, this particular one, Finding Noel, I don't know if your copy mentions it or not, David, but he dedicated this book to his mother.
Yes.
Yes, who had passed away, I believe, this same year on Valentine's Day.
I did take a note on that because this man, Richard Paul Evans, is the author. Many of you know of him. I did not. But he obviously had a great devotion to his mother.
Yeah.
His first big hit book, The Christmas Box, he tied that to her, and
yes,
she was the inspiration and so on and so forth. And then, as you mentioned, his mother died on Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And it was that year that he decided he was going to write this book and dedicate it to her, which he does.
Yeah, quite frequently in a lot of his books he will make mention, like in just comments and stuff, pages before the story actually gets started, how he always commented that his mother was always his biggest fan.
Mm-hmm.
Fan and his biggest fan.
He used to sell his books in the doctor's office to patients in the waiting room.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure she's very proud of him.
Well, not only that, but it's why I took a note on this, because the one of the main characters in this book, Finding Noel, is Mark Smart. And as the book begins, and we're talking about the novel now, not real life.
Correct.
This guy, Mark Smart's mother, has just died.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, wow, this guy must have,
Evans
must have had a real devotion to his mom.
I believe so. And in when I finished the book for the second time, as I read it the first time, I was very much aware of it, that, you know, the relationships with all of his characters, his main characters, and with their mothers. For me, it was very prevalent in this story, not only with Mark, but with his counterpart, Macy, with her mother, and then I don't know if the other character, Joette, I don't believe they mentioned the mother, but your two main characters, the mothers played an important role in their lives.
Real mothers and adoptive mothers, because that comes into play as well. So as you mentioned a few minutes ago, Kathy Klein, generally his novels are about love, whether it's romantic love or family love, and this novel certainly is. The relationships that he explores between Mark and Macy, the female lead character, and their various relationships with their parents, their adoptive parents, their real parents. So that's the only thing that got a little bit confusing to me, because there's a lot of names in this book now.
There is, and there's an awful lot of relationships that he touches on and goes into, although the relationship itself, you always see it, of course, they're gone, but you always see it through the eyes of his characters. So it doesn't really ever dwell, and the story, I think, moves along because both of those characters, Mark and Macy, have, we'll say, issues that they have to resolve before they can move forward in their lives.
Yeah. The title of the book, again, if you're just joining us, maybe a few minutes late today, Finding Noel, Richard Paul Evans. Was this a book club selection at North Trails Library, or is he just chose him because he's a very popular guy?
I just chose him because he is very popular, and like I said, he writes a very heartwarming story, and I always think that it's appropriate this time of year
it's a Christmas novel. Read
something that's heartwarming.
Absolutely. You want to read this. This is not a 4th of July novel. It's a Christmas
novel. Right, and it's not a murder mystery, and, you know, it's just kind of one of those laid back, by the end of the book, good feel, does have a happy ending, things are resolved, and folks move forward in their lives in a very positive way.
Well, let's talk a little bit about, first of all, the guy, the main character, Mark Smart. The novel opens. Don't worry, folks. We rarely spill the beans. We set the stage. We don't want to ruin the read for you if you decide you want to read it. But it opens on a early winter night, November, I believe it is. It's cold, snowy. It's in Utah, Salt Lake City,
yes.
I believe.
Yes.
And it's just 11 days after this character, Mark Smart's mother, has died, and his car suddenly conks out along the roadway on this snowing to beat the band.
I think he's only been in Utah about a year. He had gone to
school.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, he was there, and yeah.
Well, he's had more problems than losing his mother, although that would certainly be the most important thing. At this time in his life, 11 days after his mother's death, he is from Alabama originally. He ended up going to the University of Utah because he happened to get a scholarship there, good grades scholarship. He was an engineering student, but he just lost his scholarship. They had financial cutbacks or something like that. So he's lost his scholarship. He's out of school. He's lost his dorm room. He lost his part-time job at the college, working in a bookstore or wherever he was.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I think that's right.
Registrar's office.
Yes.
Comes
to
me now. And his car conks out. Oh yes, there's one more thing. His girlfriend. Just
dumped him. Yes, he got a Dear John letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so things have kind of, no pun intended, snowballed on him rather quickly.
Unusual name for the girlfriend. I was trying to decide how to pronounce it. Tennys. Tennys.
Tennys. Well, if you remember, pretty far into the story, when he was having a conversation with her later on in his story, and when she had dumped him because she started dating this chiropractor, and his name was Ball. His last name was Ball, and he had made reference. He said, "So if you would have married him, because obviously she didn't end up marrying him," he says, "then your name would have been Tennys Ball," and got a chuckle out of me, and I'm sure that's what he intended.
Well, an unusual spelling of, first of all, an unusual name for a girl to begin with.
Yes.
Unusual spelling. So, I don't know. At this point, this is still pretty early in the book.
Yeah.
Because they lay out Mark's story in pretty short order, about one or two chapters. I began to think, I can remember my first reaction was, what more is going to happen to this guy? does he have an infected toe and pink eye and just got a bad haircut? It just seemed like it was raining pretty heavy on him.
But you know what? I mean, not everybody's lives, I think, you might not be dealing with all of that at one time, but I'm sure there are some folks in their lives, maybe, a lot of heavy stuff came at them at one time, and I think that's what a lot of people you can relate to, because I think we've all had, things that have been thrown at you, life happens, and you just think, holy heck, what'd I do wrong?
More. And actually, he, because of other things that have happened in his life earlier, which are revealed later in the book, he's been battling depression. And actually, he's contemplating, when his car conks out, suicide. I mean, he started to think about it anyway.
Yeah, well, and it was like, you know, okay, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was getting ready to check out.
So he gets out of the car, goes to, finds a restaurant, coffee shop, right?
Yes.
And he's going to go in there and try to call somebody to, you know, fix his car.
Well, he was actually, I believe, on his way home. Because did he not pick up a job in as a janitor or maintenance or something at the school?
Oh, that's right, at the high school.
Yeah, and he was literally was on his way home. Once he got home, he was going to check out. Now, they never go into, he never goes into detail as to how he was going to do it or whatever, because as the story, I think, immediately progresses, once he makes the stop and goes to this coffee shop, the story changes, it pivots, and that's irrelevant at this point, you know, two pages later.
I forgot about that, because that's one of the things he was mulling over in his mind. He says, here I am cleaning toilets in a high school, you know, how much lower can I go? That sort of train of thought. So, well, actually it turns out he can go a little bit lower, because just as he walks up to the door of the coffee shop, the waitress inside flips the sign over and says, it says, we're closed.
We're closed. I know. I thought, oh, man.
I couldn't help myself. This is ridiculous, I know, but I'm trying to picture. You know, you get mental pictures in your mind.
Yes.
And this author's very good at description. He did not describe the restaurant initially, and all I could think of was the restaurant in Seinfeld, you know, that they always go to. It's just called Restaurant.
Restaurant, yes.
They all end up there. Elaine and George and Jerry.
Yes,
and
yes. Well, it seems to be, you know, a social gathering place, and I think it was called the Hut. I believe that was the same in this area. It's a very popular place, and people came.
Java Hut.
Yes, yes. People came after shopping or whatever, and they would hang out there.
Yeah. I forget the exact circumstances. She sees him through the glass door and takes pity on him. And she opens the door and says, I'm sorry, we just closed.
We just closed,
And he said, look, I just need to make a phone call. I'm not going to bother you.
Yeah. And, of course, that's our counter character to Mark, who is Macy.
Mm-hmm.
And she, as we get to know her later on in the story, you know, the kind heart, I think, that she has. And she does. She opens the door and she lets him in to make the phone call, and ultimately ends up offering to make him a cup of hot chocolate.
Mm-hmm. There's nobody else there. She's the night manager.
Yes.
Getting ready to close up. In fact, she had locked the door.
Yes.
At that time. But she lets him make a phone call, because he was trying to call a garage or something that could come and get his car.
Yeah.
And the guy that he called, nobody there. They're closed. There's no answer. There's no answering machine. He finally hangs up, and she says, trouble? He says, well, kind of. And then, I don't know, I tried to put myself in the position of this character, Mark, but, I mean, he ends up almost immediately literally crying on her shoulder, which I thought was a little bit unusual. Now, maybe, I don't know.
Well, I think sometimes
it broke down.
He did. He literally wept.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes, for some folks, it's a lot easier to cry on a stranger's shoulder than it is, you know, a family member. And I think it probably just depends on the circumstances. Maybe ordinarily Mark would not have done this, but when you look at the lineup of what he's dealing with, you know, probably thought, what the heck, who cares?
You know, I didn't think about that, because there's a line that he uses. And every once in a while, there's a little philosophy that he throws
in. I enjoy that. And he does that with a lot of his stories.
I actually copied it down word for word. We always tell our deepest secrets to strangers. Now, I copied it down because I thought, I would never do that. I don't relate to that. But now when you're saying the circumstances, it's snowing to beat the band, his car's dead, all this other stuff that's happened, that was probably it. You know,
he just he probably
lost
it. Had enough and really, who cares?
And then proceeded to tell her much of, not in glorious detail, but tell her what had happened. You know, everything that he lost his job, he lost his scholarship. He just says, my mother just died.
Yeah.
That kind of opens the floodgates for her. And that's the key to her, because she's had similar circumstances, figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
So, and by the way, it was funny. He asked what her name is, and she says Macy, and he says Macy. And she says, "Yeah, like the parade."
Yeah.
And Macy
Wood. Macy Wood.
Yeah, I had to stop and look at my notes because it turns out that we don't know whether that's her real name or not. It turns up a little bit later. Listen, we have to take a quick break here. We'll continue our conversation with this heartwarming Christmas story. It's about love. It's about hope. It's about reconciling in many different ways, not just romance, although romance does blossom amongst these two characters, but much more to it than that. You're listening to It's Your Turn here on WISR, and we'll take a break and continue our discussion about Finding Noel by Richard Paul Evans. Our guest is Kathy Klein from North Trails Library, and we will be back after these words.
When it's time to make funeral arrangements, more people than ever are asking about cremation. They're asking, is it right for us? Is it the kind of funeral arrangement that we'll feel comfortable with? Tell you what, ask Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler about cremation. They'll help you to understand. They'll answer all of your questions. Is it appropriate for your family? What kind of funeral service is appropriate? What's the cost? These are all good questions, and Thompson Miller will help you with some answers. Cremation offers three advantages: simplicity, convenience, and it's local. Thompson Miller Cremation Service is provided right here in Butler at our own newly created facility. We assure you that your loved one will never leave our care at any point in the process. So let's talk it over privately right here at Thompson Miller, or call us at 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
It's the holiday season, and you're buying gifts for everyone, but not everyone lives around here anymore. So you've got to ship those gifts, and you want a local, reliable shipping company that you can trust to get that package to your loved ones. We suggest Going Postal in Butler. Going Postal, just off Newcastle Road. They'll find a way to ship just about anything. Simple, too. Just take the gift up. They pack it. They ship it. And if you want to get stocking stuffers like lottery tickets or Christmas cards, they've got those, too. They're just off Newcastle Road, right in between Villa Grande and King's Restaurant. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping store. Welcome back. It's the book talk edition of It's Your Turn today, just before Christmas, and appropriately we're discussing a Christmas novel, Finding Noel, by Richard Paul Evans, chosen by Kathy Klein at North Trails Library. How are things going up at North Trails, by the way? Are you busy this time of year?
It gets a little quiet. Quieter than usual, mm-hmm. because folks are gearing up for the holidays. But then once they get everything in place and they're ready for the holidays, then, you know, they start trickling back in, and everybody wants this, you know, a nice story to read through the holidays. So, mm-hmm.
So back to where we stopped talking about when she says her name is Macy Wood. And so obviously there's an emotional moment here. It's late at night. He says, well, I got to walk home. She says, I'll drive you home. And they get in her car, which is all covered with snow, by the way, out in back of the coffee shop, and drops her off. And he is, quite frankly, he seems to be smitten right off the bat. Because he's, you know, and he talks about he can't stop thinking about her, can't stop dreaming about her.
Yeah.
Goes back to the coffee shop. Remember exactly when, the next day, a couple of days later.
I think, it was quite soon.
And he asks, is Macy, Macy working today? And I go, what? Nobody here named Macy. What's her last name? Wood. Nobody here by the last name of Wood. Well, this is mystifying.
Well, we would. I remember the first time that I read this story, and when he goes back and he's looking for her and not finding her, right away my mind went to, oh, here's this angel. You know, because it's a Christmas time and the holidays, and we all love a good story. You know, like It's a Wonderful Life and
Heaven Can Wait.
Yeah, you know, that there's this angel that appears and, you know, it saves the character and nobody else sees it. You know, and I thought, oh, okay, I'm going to enjoy this. But that's not what happened.
I didn't think of the angel, although I did think, because you don't know at this point. Right. You just read it and say, what the heck? I thought that it was, you know, maybe he was hallucinating. He had like passed out in his car and the snowstorm, and he imagined all this. But it turns out that when he finally did see her a day or two after that, found her at the coffee shop, he said, nobody here. They said there's nobody here by the name of Macy or by the name of... She says, that's because they think my name is Mary Hummel.
Yes.
Boing.
Boing, yes. Like, okay, Macy... Mary, he really couldn't get the connection, how you could go from Macy to Mary, and it finds out that...
Adoption.
Exactly. Yeah, Macy has her own story that she ultimately shares with Mark. And again, Mr. Evans doesn't go into great detail, but he goes into enough detail that you immediately... understand what she has gone through and where she was coming from. And that, for me, it was immediate, the connection between the two of them.
Yeah, loss of a mother, not exactly the same as Mark, whose mother died, but loss of her biological mother. And
Macy's biological mother, she lost her, she was only 7. When she lost her mother. Mm-hmm. So the relationship that Mark had built with his mother, because I want to say, if I remember correctly, the characters, these two characters around 20, 22 years old,
yeah,
something
well, Mark
like that.
Was in college, so early 20s, and his mother just died, so obviously...
Yeah. So obviously he had many more years with his mother and... building that relationship from a child to a teenager to a young adult, where Macy didn't have that luxury. She lost her mother when she was only 7.
So here we are, several chapters into the book already. Whence the title, Finding Noelle? We haven't come across Noelle. No. We won't for a while, but
exactly.
Who the heck is Noelle?
Yeah.
It's Macy's sister.
It's Macy's sister, and although as things happen, I think somewhere in the story, I don't know whether it was Macy relating a conversation with a psychologist or whatever, but that she, at one point, remember at the very beginning, she couldn't even remember her sister's name. Mm-hmm. She
and
had
sister
trouble.
Sister was three years younger. Yeah, she was 4.
Exactly. Macy she was 7. Yeah, and she was Macy was 7, Noelle was 4, but Macy couldn't remember her sister's name. And they said, well, that's not uncommon, because when you have traumatic experience like that and you're coping and you're dealing, especially as a young child, that's not uncommon to block that. And you know, when you think about what Macy went through at 7 years of age, it doesn't surprise me that she would not remember her sister's name, because it wasn't just the trauma of losing her mother, but the trauma of being separated from her family, her father, and going through. And she had been in several foster homes before she was adopted.
And then the state, when they finalized the adoption, they separated the two girls on purpose, it turns out. They didn't want them to be together. And the other girl is only 4, so possibly no memory or no accurate memory.
No.
So she does have, however, Macy, we're talking about, she does have one clue. She's been trying to find her sister for some time.
Yes.
She has one clue. Christmas angle comes in here. It's a Christmas ornament.
It's a Christmas ornament.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But she doesn't, I don't think it connects with her right away. Because her father, whenever they, you know, and I found this very insightful whenever he was writing with about Macy and her relationship with her father, that for a seven-year-old, you know, he is saying, Macy is thinking, oh, she spent the whole day with her father. They went to the movies. They had popcorn. They did this. They the whole day. And he bought her, remember he bought her a little trinket of every holiday of the year. And in her mind, she knew something devastating was going to happen because that's always the way things worked. You know, if something off was going to happen, there was always that good day before something terrible happened. And it was when it was the end of that day when he handed her this ornament. And I think, what did the ornament say? Just Noel on it?
Just Noel. But it was a, what's commonly referred to today as a glass ball that you hang on a tree. Christmas ball.
Yeah.
And in fact, on my, the cover of the copy of the book that I have, do you have the same one?
I do.
Yeah, it looks like we do. That's the title, Finding Noel, is written on a big red Christmas ball.
Yes.
That's the, with a big red ribbon above it, and it's hanging from a tree. So, you know, that's going to be part of the plot. As it turns out, the father gave each of the little girls, he gave them twin ornaments, twin balls.
Twin ornaments, and he said, this is from your mother.
Yeah. This... This, I don't want to say this is predictable, but this reminded me like an old Bonanza series, you know, where
you got
the same rings, you know. The father gave his two children the same rings, and they find out 20 years later that they're brothers because they see the, oh, look, you got the ring, you got the matching ring, we must be related. It's a not a new plot device.
Not
it's
at all.
It's kind of a worn... plot device, but it works here. It didn't bother me.
It does. No, yeah. It didn't bother me either.
And it's the nice Christmas tie-in, you know?
Yeah. Well, and like I said, I just so enjoy how Richard Paul Evans tells his stories and how he makes them flow. And, you know, just the phrasing and stuff that he uses. That in itself is heartwarming.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's just got a very nice way of telling a story, you know. But he did, and I thought, well... And you know, he even brings in, now remember, this is 2006, whenever he wrote this. And again, I said, the insight or the amount of research that he does, I'm not sure which, but when she is talking, you know, Macy's father, the reason that she couldn't and she didn't stay with father is because father had his own problems that he was dealing with.
He had addiction problems.
He had addiction problems. And at one time, you know, when she's thinking, because it kind of goes back and forth a little bit when you start getting into Macy's story, not so much Mark's. Mark's is like current, present day. But Macy's, which makes sense because the story is Finding Noel, mm-hmm. I guess, who was Macy's sister. But there's little flashbacks. And so you get the story through Macy, whether she's 7 or whether she's 11. I mean, he doesn't linger back there.
But it's the revelations of her past are drawn out mm-hmm. over several chapters where really... You know pretty much all there is to know about Mark right in the beginning. In fact, Evans puts there's a prologue in here that tells about his mother.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no suspense there.
No.
It takes a while to learn about Macy's background. On the other hand, it doesn't take very long at all for their romance to warm up. Did you find that believable?
You know, I thought about that. And I do find, I mean, I guess how I reconciled it was, you know, when you think about Mark, him at the end of his ropes, you know, he's been in Utah for a year and a half. We know he had, you know, challenges with his father. He'd lost his mother. All this stuff happened to him. And Macy opens the door, not only to the restaurant, but also to kindness. I don't think he had experienced a certain amount of kindness in a very long time. Because he had been, I mean, he had a great relationship with his mother, and that's, I mean, I'm sure he amounted kindness, you know, from his mom, but he had been away a year and a half. You know, now he finds out that, you know, she is gone. And as he says later on in the story and dialogue, talking to Macy about how his father always seemed to be pushing him away. So I thought, you know, if you're in that situation and someone shows you just a little bit of kindness, I don't know how I would respond to it.
It's a good point of view. By the way, this was a platonic relationship that developed rather quickly. And I had forgotten about the fact that he didn't find out that his mother had died until 2 days after her funeral.
He missed a funeral.
His aunt had called the university, the dorm, where he was. Nobody knew that he was out of school.
No, because I think he was embarrassed, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. So I had forgotten about that part. So that's a good point. But anyway, still, I mean, okay, you can fall in love in 3 weeks. But he proposed to Macy after 3 weeks.
He did.
Now we're, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't know either, because I thought, I don't know if that's believable. I suppose that it is. I'm sure there's probably, you know, many folks out there, maybe they did get married after a month. I don't know, because so much was going on. And, you know, how do you, like in so many stories that you read, when you meet someone, well, you just know.
Well, here's the deal. He thinks he knows, but, surprise, listeners, Macy turns him down.
Yes.
He proposes, he says, I want to marry you, and she says, what? Are you nuts? What do we, you don't know me.
You don't even know me.
You know, he only met me 3 weeks ago. Are you crazy?
And he says he knows that he doesn't not want to spend the rest of his life without her. That's what he does know.
Well, we're one-third of the way through the Christmas book. What's going to happen here?
I know.
She turns him down flatly, and, well, there's another character that's introduced who kind of comes to the rescue. And is it Joette? Is that the
that's
waitress?
How I, yes. Yeah. She worked at Denny's, I believe, the local Denny's.
It looked like there should be another couple of letters in her name, but it was always
Joette. Yeah, and I think Macy referred to her mostly as Jo.
Mm-hmm. So we had another unusual woman's name. Dennis, yes. And Joette. She... with her insight, sees that there's, you know, this romance should continue. It's,
yes.
Should be given a little bit more time, and she kind of arranges, reconciliation, get them together again.
Yes, she does. Well, and, you know, Joette, too, has her own story. Like I said, this story is just about every character has a very traumatic experience in their lives that really defines who they are at this point in this story.
Joette, and you could, I could see this coming. She is like a she's like a mother figure to Macy.
She rescued Macy.
Yeah.
Although it ultimately ends up that Joette at the end feels that Macy rescued her. Yeah, so it's that kind of a story that, like when I said at the beginning about it being about relationships.
Mm-hmm. Give and take.
Absolutely. In fact, when you had mentioned about how he always has like a little quote, insight, and actually pretty much at the beginning of every chapter.
I think it is the beginning of every one.
Yeah, and it's actually, it says from Mark Smart's diary. So these are thoughts that, you know, Mark is writing down throughout this story. And I found the one that I found that I thought, oh, I had never thought about it that way when you talk about people and relationships. But he writes in his diary, I have never felt truly at ease around the clean, shiny people of this world. Life has taught me the most trustworthy and honest are usually those who are frayed around the edges. Not always, but usually.
Well, these two main characters are certainly frayed around the edges, that's
exactly.
For sure.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
And maybe that's what they see in each other. Yeah. So, are there other romances that blossom, or are they both sad whenever they break apart? No, I'm thinking of tennis. She eventually ends up with some other doctor.
Oh yeah, this is the girlfriend that was back in Huntsville, Alabama, yeah, that he got the Dear John letter from.
She doesn't marry Dr. Ball and become Tennis Ball.
No, she does not.
She's some other doctor. Mark finds this out because, you know, after he's rejected by Macy, he ends up going back to Alabama.
He does. He does. He says, well, and there again, the insight that he has given his characters, because Macy says to Mark at one point, you know, you have these issues, basically. You don't know me, and you have these. You cannot continue to run away, because because his mother had died. He felt he had no reason to go back home, mm-hmm, to Alabama, because he had no relationship with his father.
His father, not necessarily abusive to him, certainly not physically, but
no.
He resented him going to
pushing him away his
school.
Whole life, not yeah. really mentoring.
He wanted him to take over the family business, which was a garage repair shop, Smart's Auto Repair or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he had him work there Saturday mornings, even when he was a little kid. And remember, he couldn't stand it. He couldn't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, and finally, his father just left him not come, mm-hmm, instead of always trying to, I don't know, encourage would be the word, it'd be more like badgering him to come to the shop, the mechanic shop with him. He finally just one morning quit, and Mark just never went again.
Let's take another break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about the, we really haven't talked about this very much, Finding Noel. I mean, after all, that's the title of the novel, but
yeah.
The characters are so interesting. It's good to talk
they really
about
are.
Them, kind of set the stage. Kathy Klein is with us from North Trails Library. It's a book talk day today on It's Your Turn. We're a little bit early from our regular, what would be our regular book talk day, but it turns out this month that would be Christmas Day. So obviously we're going to go a week early with the book talk this time around. And we'll be back to wrap up our conversation. We have a few more minutes with Kathy Klein here on It's Your Turn on WISR, back after these words.
There is no greater pleasure than the opportunity to gather with loved ones and share your season's greetings and good wishes. Bayada Pediatrics, the Ellen O'Brien Geyser Center, and Burger Hut wishes you and your family a wonderful and nostalgic Christmas together.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot is home to the tastiest turkeys in western Pennsylvania. And this holiday season, Dave Jones is offering a special as a thank you to his loyal customers throughout the years. From now through December 19th, the Jones Turkey Farm is lowering the price of a frozen turkey from $3.25 per pound to just $2.50. That's right. The best turkeys in western PA can be yours for just $2.50 per pound. Visit JonesTurkeyFarm.com to learn more. Make your holiday season merry by getting a Jones turkey for the whole family to enjoy.
It's a book talk day, a week early, as we explained in our earlier segment, because of the way the Christmas holiday falls this year. But we have a Christmas book, a Christmas novel that we're discussing, a very popular one. It's not a new one. In fact, it's about 10 years old, by Richard Paul Evans, who had a tremendous hit earlier, even before Finding Noel, with The Christmas Box, which I imagine is still in print. It must be, if it's
so
popular.
You know. Oh, yes. Many copies countywide in your public libraries.
Oh, really? Well, this novel is called Finding Noel. So, Macy, who has been attempting, but with very no success whatsoever, to try to find her sister, she's kind of encouraged by Mark to, hey, well, let's, you know, if you want to find her, let's really go to work on this. You know, let's see what we can do.
Yep.
Adoption laws are different in every state. Maybe we can do something. So she starts meeting with various government officials.
Yeah, she goes to the caseworker.
Yeah, because adoption is a legal process.
It is.
So there are records.
Yeah.
And she goes to, I'm trying to, is it Andrea? Is that the caseworker?
Yes, I believe you're right. Andrea, yeah. I don't remember the last name. But
I don't either, but it was Andrea. So she tries to get some help, but eventually it gets a little bit, another shred of information,
mm-hmm.
And finally gets some pretty hard info. Pretty much knows where her sister Noelle ended up, who she was adopted by.
Yeah, well, what was so interesting about this storyline for me was, you know, Mark, the character that we got to know, he had obvious choices, that it was truly his choice. And Macy wanted to find her sister so badly that she was forced, in order to get to her sister, she had to go back and to face her past, mm-hmm. because that's where the information was.
Yeah, because Macy would, her social security card says Mary Hummel, which
exactly.
is why everybody at the
Well, and then
shop.
Her sister, what made it very, very difficult is because her sister, at the age of four, being adopted too, the family who adopted Noelle requested it to be sealed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not easy finding this information.
We had some flashbacks here, and Kathy Klein alluded to these earlier, where she goes back to the mid-70s when she was at the Hummels, where the family
yes.
that ended up adopting Mary/Macy.
Yeah, because Mrs. Hummel didn't like the name Macy, so she changed the C to an R, and she became Mary.
And Mrs. Hummel was not good. The Hummels were Irene and Dick. It was the mother that was abusive, the adoptive mother, Irene.
Yes, and she was physically abusive to her.
Yeah, she hit her in the face.
She was not a nice person, and she was just physically abusive.
One day, or 1 week, remember, Macy couldn't go to school because she had a black eye. Cause
yeah.
Her mom had
well,
hit
this
her.
Was the was this not the incident after? Was it an Aunt Stephanie, and that's the only thing I couldn't connect to. Was Aunt Stephanie really an aunt? Was it Mrs. Hummel's sister or Mr. Hummel's sister? Because remember, I don't know where Mrs. Hummel went, and she would leave Macy with Aunt Stephanie.
Mm-hmm.
And she decided she was going to tell Aunt Stephanie that Mrs. Hummel hits her. Well, Stephanie spoke to Mrs. Hummel. And that's when she really got a beating, and she missed that whole week of school. And she never spoke of it again.
So then we have Barbara and Marshall Wood. This is another couple that figure in here. And then we have the Thorups, at least that's how I was pronouncing it in my mind. And this is the couple that ended up adopting the missing sister.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And again, that mother was not very, well, I guess I can't say she wasn't very pleasant, because we really didn't get to know her. There was just that one encounter that Macy had with her mm-hmm. when she knocked at the door. And I think probably Noelle's adopted mother felt very threatened.
I'm sure
they were
would.
In a very affluent neighborhood, just the opposite mm-hmm. of what Macy grew up with. And she pretty much wanted to put the past behind her. It was her daughter. They moved forward.
Actually changed her name, too, because
she did.
Macy asked, you know, well, I'm looking for Noelle. And she said, you mean Christina Noelle?
Yes, people.
Actually,
I haven't heard that name in a long time,
yeah,
she said.
I called her Christy.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and her mother, Noelle's adopted mother, very much so discouraged Macy from reaching out and finding. In fact, she almost let it slip as to what college she was attending. And then she caught herself and didn't even share that information.
There were other things that, I don't know how much further we're going to go here, because we don't want to ruin the
wrap
wonderful
up.
Read
yeah.
of this book, because there is not only more chapters, but there's a wonderful afterword that he puts on here that kind of ties everything up.
It does, yeah.
In a neat little Christmas bow.
Exactly. But there are resolutions.
Mm-hmm. We learn more about some of the families, though, that you know, maybe lessened some of the negative feelings you would have about, for example, it turns out that Macy's father had contracted polio when he was a child. Mm-hmm. And when you find this out, then maybe you're a little bit easier on him.
And I think, and this is where the character Joette or Joe comes into play, that remember she was a big fan of The Wizard of Oz.
That's right.
And, you know, at one point in this story, she makes reference to, and I think it's she was talking with Mark, and, you know, saying that as children, when we are growing up, you know, we see our parents and we kind of, they're our heroes and we put them on pedestals, and you don't realize that they are human too. It's just like in The Wizard of Oz, when Toto goes and throws back that curtain and you see there's nothing but a man standing back there, playing with the gadgets, you know.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
That occurred at a Thanksgiving dinner because Mark had met Joette by this time, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they had, she invited him to a Thanksgiving dinner. She was still trying to get the two of them back together again.
Yeah.
And she compared parenting to The Wizard of Oz.
She did.
And that, that kind of finalized his decision to go back to Alabama.
Yes.
When he started thinking about what she was saying, mm-hmm. Well, okay, maybe I should go back. And
well, and the thing of it is, when he does go back, and we'll say, as that curtain is pulled on The Wizard of Oz, and then even Macy with her own father, you know, when those curtains are pulled back, so to speak, then they start seeing their fathers in a different light, that they indeed are just human too. And they learn more of their story as to what made them who they are, were, as they, even as they were growing up.
And then a wonderful twist. I can say this because it's crucial too into changing what may have been negative feelings about these original parents that we met.
Yeah.
It turns out that the guy who Mark thinks is his father, who owned the Smart Auto Garage and so on, mm-hmm. wasn't actually his father.
No.
Which is a bombshell.
Yeah.
His mother, his biological mother, was pregnant with him, and his biological father was killed in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And this guy whom he had detested all of his life
raised
his mom to take care of him.
Well, and in his...
Wow, he felt horrible when he found this out.
Yeah, well, and his mom, I mean, she was kind of dating both of those men,
mm-hmm.
and then, but she, her heart really was with, what was his name, Virgil?
Virgil Hunt.
Virgil Hunt, yep. Yes. And they had gotten married, and he was drafted and went into the war. It was 1969, so it would be the Vietnam War.
Mm-hmm.
And he was 4 months in. And he was killed 4 months in. And that happened all the time. So these are the points and the parts of this story that is so much like reality that we can relate to, because I absolutely know someone who actually 3 months in was drafted in the Vietnam War and lost his life in the war. I mean, so it happens. What makes this story so believable for the most part.
He had come across Mark when he went back to Alabama, going through his mother's stuff, came across her wedding certificate of marriage, and he realized that he and the guy he thought was his father were married like 9 weeks before he was born.
Yeah.
And that was, we'll let you discover this. It's well done.
Yeah.
Even in the end, our time begins to run short here, but even in the end, Richard Paul Evans, who's the author of this story, Finding Noelle, actually dies in the Holy Family. here's our ultimate Christmas connection here.
Exactly.
You know, with Mary and Joseph and fostering and adoption and, mm-hmm. you know, all of that. And it does
no
kind of
room
tie
at
it together.
The end. Absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
It's like you said, like we said at the very beginning, very heartwarming story, moves along very quickly. I don't believe there's any loose ends by the time you're through with this story. He has tied them all very nicely into a nice little Christmas ribbon.
Evans, we're talking about Richard Paul Evans. And I'm reading from the fly leaf of the book, so mm-hmm. he may have written many more since then. Says his 10 novels have all appeared on the New York Times bestseller list. 13 million copies in print, translated into more than 18 languages, adapted into award-winning television movies. Oh, and he lives with his wife and their children in Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City.
So the bulk of this novel is set in Salt Lake City. That's an interesting tie-in as well. And did you say you're not sure? Has this one been made into a film? You're not. I don't know.
I couldn't find any reference to it. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't believe so. I'm rather surprised that it's not a Hallmark because I can see it as a Hallmark movie.
It's our classic stuff. They got two channels running nothing but Christmas movies back to back this time of year. And if the Christmas box is earlier, bestseller was such a hit, you'd think they'd crank this one up too.
Yeah, because what, like I said at the beginning, what I like so much about his stories and all of his stories is he takes his characters, and when you meet them, they already have lived a good portion of life, not making any reference to their ages, but a good portion of life, and he doesn't spend the entire story dwelling on the misfortunes. He looks at them, and his characters are moving forward in their life, how they resolve them, and that they continue in their lives in a more positive way.
So, the big question, of course, that our listeners are asking is, did Macy ever find Noel? We're not telling you.
We're not telling you.
And did Mark and Macy ever get back together again? We're not telling you.
No.
You can read the book.
You'll have to read the book, and you will not be disappointed.
Finding Noel by Richard Paul Evans. Kathy Klein, always good talking about books with you.
Always a pleasure to talk about books with you, David.
Thanks for being here, and never more appropriate when we finish a book talk session than this month to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you and all of your listeners, David.
All righty, more of It's Your Turn to come. Stick around after this break.
Well, we're wrapping things up on the It's Your Turn program. Tyler Friel with you. Much thanks to Dave Malarkey for giving us some book talk. Even though he's on vacation, he's still here. And also, big thanks to you guys for opening up the phone lines for Open Talk. On tomorrow's edition of It's Your Turn, Tracy Morgan will have a chance to talk honeybees. Yes, that's right, honeybees. We have a local expert in to talk about that and what exactly is going on in the world of honeybees. And then also, of course, it's travel time as we hit the road for the holidays and what entails us for our winter travel. Well, Kayla Molzan will sit down with some folks from AAA and we'll discuss that all coming up on tomorrow's edition of It's Your Turn. And of course, if you missed any It's Your Turn interviews or open talks, whatever it may be, you can find them online at WISR680.com. That does it for today. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 12:30 as always. It's Your Turn right here on WISR 680 AM.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 8686. The pick 3 is 359, 359. The pick 4, 4695. The pick 5, 02072. The wild ball for each of those is 2. And the treasure hunt, 1, 8, 23, 25, and 30. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Ended a three-game losing streak by defeating the Arizona Coyotes 4-2 on Saturday night in Glendale, Arizona. Now it's on to Denver, Colorado to meet the Colorado Avalanche. We'll have the game for you on the Penguins Radio Network beginning at 8:30 with the pregame show and then puck drop at 9 p.m. with Josh Getzoff and Phil Bork. Join us for Penguins Hockey as the Penguins meet the Avs on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins Hockey brought to you in part by Tri-Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Hunter Truck Sales, Thrower Concrete, Monday Shoes, Camisa's Auto Body, Butler Agway, A&D Heating and Cooling, and Cash Dollar and Associates.
Over the past decade, the WISR staff has delivered thousands of poinsettias to area nursing homes as part of their annual Project Poinsettia effort. The residents are grateful, and our team now often includes Mrs. Claus and youngsters who sing and dance to create joy in the hearts of those who may not have any visitors during the holiday season. It is with sincere gratitude that we recognize our community stewards who graciously underwrite the poinsettias. Project Poinsettia is sponsored in part by Tri Rivers Musculoskeletal Centers, Peter's Chocolate Shop, A&E Heating and Cooling, and Dr. Steven Hinterberger.
It's up-to-the-minute local, national, and world news from WISR Butler, Pennsylvania, and the CBS Radio News Network.